All right, class, welcome back. This is Optimus Fields at My Living Truth, and we're at block height 639,304, and the price is currently 9,259. Take it away, Nick.
Yo, what's up, guys? It's Nick here, and today we have a Bitcoin cold storage with Tails demonstration all done by Justifer. A huge shout out to Justifer for making this whole slideshow and putting everything together to have the show ready for tonight. Before we get started, we're just going to go from top to bottom and have everyone introduce themselves. And then, yeah, Justifer can get started after that. So, Justifer, you want to kick it off?
Sure. Yeah, I'm Justifer, longtime Sat Stacker and Bitcoin enthusiast.
Dennis, you want to chime in? I think your mic's off, bro. Yeah, Dennis, your mic, we're not hearing anything. We'll skip over. Dennis, longtime Bitcoin kindergarten OG, having some mic troubles. And next we got Jackie.
Hi guys, I'm Jackie. I like Bitcoin in stacking sets, and my hobby is nuking commies. So I'll pass the word.
Legend. And last but not least, we have Nabismo.
What's up, guys? Nabismo Primetime, big fan, Bitcoin, Tails, and BTC Kindergarten. Thanks for having me.
Let's go. All right, Justifer, I'm going to open up the slideshow so they can see the slides and then take it away.
Cool. Today we'll be creating our do-it-yourself cold storage. And cold storage, for those that are already familiar, is where we're going to store our Bitcoin long-term. And ideally, it's not in a device that is contacting the internet at any point. And so that's what makes it cold versus a hot wallet, like a mobile wallet, where it's actively touching the internet, which opens up a whole series of security vulnerabilities. We want to avoid that and create our own cold storage device out of open source software and a USB drive. So for the materials, we'll be using a desktop or laptop, a USB flash drive, pen and paper. And then for the software, we'll be using Tails to create an operating system on that USB flash drive. And we'll also use Balina Etcher to etch that the image of Tails OS onto our flash drive. And then lastly, we'll be using QuickHash to verify that the code in Tails OS is it matches what the developer was intending. So if you folks have already put in the work and downloaded the Tails image, we'll be downloading the USB version. And it's quite a large file, so we can share it to you via Telegram for large files, or you can go ahead and download that yourself. But it does take a while. So once we have it actually downloaded, by the way, are there any questions so far?
Not for me. No. Keep going.
Cool. So first off, we're going to verify that the Tails matches what the developer provided. And we'll be using a SHA-256. Does anyone have a good handle on, you know, what hashes are and are able to kind of explain what we're doing by verifying the hash?
I mean, I could go in a little bit. So what you're doing when you're verifying the hash is first and foremost, a hash is essentially encrypting data, and then it pops out what's it, the 256 hash encryption. So it turns data into an encrypted string of letters and numbers so that no matter what you get, or depending on what you put in on the encryption code, you get I forget exactly what the number of string is, but you get the same amount of like math encryption code on the back end. And depending on it's case sensitive, so no matter what you put in, you'll pop out a different thing on the backside. But if you put in the same word or the same string of letters, you'll be able to verify it. So it's just, a fancy math equation to get an encrypted code on the back end.
Awesome. Yeah, so we'll be using a quick hash, and the only there's like lots of software that can do this hash, but I just chose quick hash because it is it's cross-platform, so anybody would be able to download quick hash and be able to run a SHA-256 hash on it. So as Optimus was saying, we'll be able to take our file as the input, and if the input is the same, the output will always be the same, but the output is the seemingly random number that is 256 characters long. So once we actually have the hash, we'll go over to we'll like do a Google search and be able to verify that the checksum that we come up with when we run the SHA-256 on that file, it matches what the developer intended. So I can show you all. Change windows. And so you can see that I have in a browser. Really, I just Googled shails. Sorry, Tails, SHA-256 hash. And we'll be able to see. Here's verifying Tails for reproducibility. We're going to verify with a checksum. That's the output of a SHA-256. We'll be able to see exactly what the SHA-256 checksum would be. So here is the SHA-256 output for this. Tails 4.8. Is anyone doing this along with me?
Not currently. I'm not.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just listening along.
Awesome. So maybe I could just show you all what running this hash is going to look like.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
So you all will actually see. Okay. So I'm going to open up Quick Hash and select SHA-256. Here I have the latest Tails 4.8. I'm just going to drag it over here and it switches over to the File tab and it's running a SHA-256 hash on it. Hashing file, please wait. And it'll go ahead and grab this SHA-256 output for our file. And it says 6399D144. So I'm just matching it up here. But I can also replace these ellipses and paste in, and I get a pop-up that says expected hash matches the computed file hash. So does anyone want to mention maybe some good practices around this. Like, why is it important that we get the hash output?
Yeah.
So
I can chime in there for a minute if you want.
Sure.
Are you talking about like why what a checksum is?
Yeah, and then why
Let's
you'd want to do it.
Oh, okay. So basically, checksum is like a signature from a one-way hash function. So whatever bytes that are included in this file go through that hash function and they produce that signature. And any change in bytes in the program, so if you change even the smallest detail about it, it's going to change that signature into something else. So if somebody loaded it with like malicious phishing files, it would, or anything really, or if it didn't download successfully, that's sometimes the case, like if it gets interrupted or something, so you want to make sure that it's all good to go.
Fantastic. And I think another like good practice with getting the actual checksum that it's supposed to be is go to like GitHub or a different website that actually stores that hash value. So we'll be able to, so if someone was really trying to be malicious about it, they would need to hack into two different sites, change the values there, not only the downloaded file, but also the checksum that it's supposed to be, in order to fool someone with this technique. So this is definitely a don't trust verify. Also, before I forget, this presentation was provided by Bit Consultants. So I want to give them a huge shout out for providing this information. So we verified the hash, and it matches. And then the next step is to take our downloaded file and open up Balina Etcher and flash the image file onto our USB flash drive. And that process takes a little while. And then we'll also verify the checksum after. That's like part of the process to verify that it installed or flashed correctly. And I think probably the most difficult part is kind of like on your own hardware. So this is launching into the boot menu, which so this is probably not something that you normally do, but shut down your computer and make sure you have that Tails OS USB that you created plugged in. And then as you turn on your computer, press and hold down the escape or the F12 key, or if you're on Mac, it would be the option key, in order to open up the boot menu. And that boot menu would tell you what to boot from and in what order. So here we'll be booting from that Tails USB drive. And so your computer is going to pull all of its information from that USB drive and not from the hard drive, which is like where some other like attacks could be, or other like viruses. Yeah, so we're just going to avoid that and put in a fresh machine. So we'll just pull from that USB drive. And Tails is a full-blown operating system that's based on Linux. And the internet is turned off by default. And it's also not going to pull from the local hard drive. Tails comes pre-installed with Electrum Wallet. And so we can go over to Applications, Internet, and Electrum Bitcoin Wallet. Any questions so far?
No, I just want to add, when you do the Balina Etcher, that the process takes like 30 minutes or something, guys. So you'd want to, you know, like set a little time out of your day where you're not going to use your computer, because it'll take a little while. But other than that,
I would add one more thing, actually, just for about the booting up off the USB. Usually on most computers, the default setting is to have it in safe boot. And a lot of people will go to plug in Tails that I've flash this for them, and they run into that where they can't boot from a USB to prevent somebody from doing something like this, a live operating system, and they'll need to go into the BIOS and disable safe boot, which will allow them to boot up from that.
Great point. A lot of people struggle with that.
Wait. Hey, Nabismo, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Because I've set up Tails on a few USB drives. But after like the initial time of booting up my computer, the USB like I don't know. It wouldn't read it. So are you familiar with what that issue is, or we can talk about it after once Jessica gets it done?
Yeah, because I feel like I'll go off on a rant, but let me kind of gather my thoughts on that one, because there's a couple different things that could be going on.
Okay, then we'll do that at the end.
All right,
continue, Jessica.
Cool. All right, so this, to get to the boot menu, might change based on who manufactured your computer. Just want to note that also. So Escape or F12 are common ones, but there's other ones for Asus and different manufacturers. So now we're in Tails. We can open up Electrum Bitcoin Wallet. And it will give you a warning saying persistence is disabled for Electrum. And that is a great thing for us, because we don't want any record of what we're about to do next, which is create a wallet and our private key. And we don't want any trace of that to remain after we're done with our process. So yes, we want to just launch Electrum anyway. Next step is to create a wallet file. And here's where you might be able to customize it. The wallet name won't matter so much because we don't want any record of it. So we won't be referencing it later. Recommend a standard wallet, but you can also create a multi-sig wallet at this stage if you really want to get involved and make your cold storage extra, have that extra layer of security with a multi-sig wallet. Then we can choose the address type, SegWit or Legacy. I like SegWit, so I'll save on fees. Any questions so far about that wallet? Okay, and let's see. Next, it will generate our private key. So this is our 12-word phrase. And this is just an example. Don't bother opening this. There isn't any Bitcoin in it. But this is what you're going to write down and never share. But be sure to write it down. Write it down twice and keep it in different locations. But this is the keep it secret, keep it safe. This is the key to your Bitcoin so that you can spend it. And then to show that you wrote it down, the next screen will ask you to re-enter that. For a password to access the Electrum wallet, it's not really needed for our purposes here. And once we finish with that process, here we have Electrum wallet. And it should show not connected to the internet, because Tails, the internet is disconnected by default. Now, what we can do next in order to deposit funds into our newly created wallet is to copy down one receive address. This is like kind of the very basic, but we could do a more advanced version a different way. So that would be a little bit more private. Does anyone, so this would be creating a static address. Does anyone want to share some downsides of that?
So about using this version is you only get one address, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you're only getting one address and you're new to Bitcoin, if you send multiple UTXOs or transaction output or Bitcoins, however you want to look at it, and you're sending them to multiple Bitcoins to the same address, then you're potentially leaking a lot of information, because then they can track where your Bitcoins are coming from, and if they're all going to one address, then anyone that's tracking or doing analytics on the Bitcoin blockchain can be pretty well assured that those Bitcoins are yours. So the best practice is to send each UTXO or each new Bitcoin that you receive or that you own to a new receive address so that you don't link all your Bitcoins and blow your privacy.
Yeah, totally. So
I wanted to say another thing, and I'm not really sure about this, so correct me if I'm wrong, but you also don't want it for security reasons, because once you send one UTXO, basically you sign the transaction with the private key to that wallet, and that's not good practice to reuse a wallet where you already signed the transaction with that private key. And I think that in fact, if you have like multiple, like you have multiple wallets that are derived from the master public and master private key, once you send an amount, an UTXO, if there is like change, that change is moved to a new address to avoid using that one. And I think that the security reason that you don't want to reuse as the same address with which you already signed the transaction is because the basically the algorithm that encrypts your private key is less strong when you sign it than the one when you actually generate it. So someone cannot, let's say, crack your private key from, like, it's gonna, they're gonna be a, they've gone, they are gonna have an hard time cracking your private key from your public key, but, and that's basically impossible, but they, it could be easier to crack your private key by a signed transaction, even if that is impossible. In the future, it may be easier. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think sure. That sounds about right to me.
Yeah, this Electrum is an HD wallet, hierarchical, deterministic, so there should be some fair separation. But for the most part, it's mainly about privacy. For example, WikiLeaks has one static address, and you're able to look up exactly how much they have received in Bitcoin donations, and everyone that has looked will know exactly how much Bitcoin WikiLeaks has spent over the years, because you know that they're still using that same static address. So we're gonna try and avoid that, and we're gonna use the master public key. So what you can do is when you go into wallet and information, you can pull up the master public key, and you can scan that with a mobile wallet. And so you can have Electrum on your phone and scan this master public key, and then you'll be able to generate a new address for every single transaction. And so it will separate out those different transactions. And so someone that is really interested in what you're up to won't be able to aggregate all of those transactions and be able to definitively say that those are all related to you.
Nice.
So there's a couple of compatible wallets that are able to take in our master public key. Obviously on desktop, you can use Electrum wallet. On a computer, for Android, Electrum wallet or Samurai Sentinel. And on Apple, Blue Wallet and BitWallet are able to do this. There might be more that have been added since this presentation was created. So with our master public key, we're going to have a similar process to generate a new wallet and just use that master public key that we have saved or scanned.
Wanted to say something. I don't know if you already said it or you wanted to say, but just wanted to add that if you leak your master public key, the ones that actually have it will be able to see every one of your addresses that you already have generated, so they will have access to, like, they will know how many you have, how many Bitcoin you have. They won't be able to move them, but you basically will dox your stack.
Beautiful.
That's a great point. Yeah. Yeah. So you don't want to be sharing your master public key with everyone. This is something to keep relatively private, because whoever has this master public key can see all of your transactions and know the exact balance.
All right, Jennifer, I got a question just to clear up. Sure. So if someone is doing this, they would create the standard wallet, and then would they create another wallet with their written down master public key? Is that what you just said?
Yeah, so in Tails, we're going to, you know, create our actual cold storage wallet.
Mm-hmm.
And then separately from that, in maybe an internet connected device, we'll be creating another wallet, but using that master public key. Okay. And that won't allow us to spend.
Awesome. Just wanted to clarify that.
So this will be creating a deposit only wallet. And we should see this is watch only. So you can see all the transactions, you can generate addresses, and pay to it. So important steps, just to recap, you've written down your recovery seed. Those were the 12 words. And you're keeping multiple copies hidden in safe places. If you lose that seed, you lose your Bitcoins. And also, earlier, the first steps were we were verifying the Tails OS image. And we used QuickHash, but you could use a different one as long as it has that SHA-256. And we compared the hash with the hash on the Tails website. Beautiful. Any questions? That's the end of the presentation.
Beautiful. Good job. Good job, Jennifer.
Hey, thanks.
Good job.
Good job, man.
Hold on. Let me get back over here. Okay. I have one question, but it's not necessarily about the lecture. It's the one I had earlier with Nabisma. So if someone can help me out, because I've done the Tails OS. I did all that, and then I stuck it on a few different USBs. But every time I load it up off the USB, like right when I put it on, I'm able to boot my computer through Tails. But then when I try to go back to it like a day later, what have you, or a week later, my computer won't read the Tails OS off that USB. So is anyone familiar with what's going on that?
What is it like? What kind of error are you getting? Is it grub, grub command failed or something in the top left corner?
I don't remember exactly, but that might be it. It just doesn't work. It doesn't do anything.
That's pretty common. And a number of issues. That being one of them. And I think, honestly, I'm not entirely sure if this is the problem, but it's the only reasonable solution I can think of. It being a USB drive, it's kind of finicky. You know, it's not always like positioned in there well, like it's kind of crooked or not making contact all the way. And voltage plays a big role in that as well. So if your computer's like low on battery or something and you're trying to run that extra accessory from that, a lot of times you'll get errors. So I find that it works to have it plugged in, like in a stable surface, not too hot or anything, in like regular conditions. And sometimes you have to try it a couple times to boot from that. How are you? Did you go in and I think I've seen your pictures. You have a Mac, right?
Yeah, I was doing these off Mac.
So you're doing the one time like boot from USB, because what's it like? Does it give you the option to like to select a boot from there and then it just goes black, or what happens?
Honestly, I'm kind of blanking on right now, but from what I remember, I would like try to, I'd put the Tails in and then I'd press the command and it just like wouldn't work on me. And I just basically, it'd go into the boot screen and then I couldn't start it from the Tails. And so I would just, you know, I'd restart my computer and try it all again. and I would just kind of like get locked out of my tails. So I wasn't sure if it was because I was on little shitty USBs or
that
what.
That could be it too. I know that not every USB supports tails too, but it sounds like you already had it working. But yes, USB quality, I think, would factor into that. Because like I said, sometimes it's not like a software issue, it's a hardware issue. Like you boot it up like the third time and it works, you know, it's really strange. And I wish I knew exactly what caused that, but I know that that's something that I deal with on a fairly common basis. I'll get like that grub command failed. Grub is like a bootloader for Linux, and it basically can't like boot up from however the program's written, and it just fails and like locks itself out. And then I'll like plug in the computer or try it again or something, and it magically works. So,
okay. All right. So it's a fairly common issue. All right. Then maybe I just need to mess with it a little more and see what happens.
Yeah. Take a picture next time you, and send it to me or post in the group or something about like what you run into. 'Cause then we'll be able to know what we're dealing with.
Okay, for sure. And then, just another thing to clarify, just for, did you, say what kind of USB that people will need? 'Cause I know there's some criteria for the USB.
Sure. Yeah, you'll probably want some with a decent amount of space, but, go ahead and invest in a quality one if you can afford it. This is supposed to be like a pretty cheap solution, but you'll probably want something with like 24 gigabytes. And I feel like that's pretty standard for these things. That might be the smallest you can buy now.
And doesn't it need minimum like 8 gigs or something like that? Or is it less?
Yeah, you know, I'm not totally sure what the actual size is, but... I think you might be able to get an 8 gigabyte one for the same price as 24, yeah, 25 yeah. gigabyte.
From what I remember, it should be like 4 gigabytes minimum. Okay, yeah, so I was going to buy an 8 gig, but they didn't sell them anymore. So you're good with 16.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's just what I wanted to clarify, because I'm pretty sure that it needs a certain amount of gigabytes on the USB for it to even work for people. So. I'm sure if you just buy one at the store, you'll be good to go. But if you have them lying around, you want them to be at least like 4 or 8 gigs.
Awesome. Yeah.
And I just want to add one of my friends, if I remember correctly, it was Leaf. He's got a script where you can, once you get it on Tails, if you want to do some other stuff besides use Electrum, you can run a script and get Wasabi on there, put it in your persistent folders and tools in Tails. So you can also modify this setup a little more, however you want to do it. But Justifer killed that.
Yeah, dude, you did an awesome job. Seriously.
That was excellent.
Good. Yeah. Lots of thanks to Bit Consultants. Go ahead and give them a follow on Twitter at Bit Consultants. And, yeah, pay it forward. Lots of people have helped me learn how to do Bitcoin and do it right. So these aren't the like absolute best practices. This isn't like foolproof, but hey, it's a good step in the right direction. So feel free to share that presentation around.
It's pretty cool too. Like,
I want to put a link to this on the website.
Let's go.
Go for it.
Go, Nick. What were you saying?
I was just going to say, like, Bitcoin's fuck you money. Like, what's more fuck you than I'm going to buy a couple dollar USB drive and store my money on it so the government can't get it? Like, that's awesome to me.
Right. And then you can just take that USB and go do whatever you want to do, wherever you want to do it.
You could store your millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin with this cheap USB.
That might be a little risky, but yeah.
it's incredible to see how when technology innovates and progresses, individual freedom is easier to achieve. And like in 20 years, we won't, like, we can't understand what will happen, but Bitcoin's cause successfully, it's going to be a bright future. And this is the proof.
Well said.
So bright, so bright. Well, anyone got some more questions? Joe, Dennis? No? Well,
you can't talk.
Joe's eating dinner right now. Don't mind him. Well, yeah, we can keep this one short and sweet. What do you think, Nick?
Yeah, I think it's good to end it here. Jestifer, again, massive shout out to you and thank you for doing this. I can't wait to get this posted for everyone to watch.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stay tuned for some more. I think we'll get together some more presentations in the future.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
I was just about to say, we'll probably do some more little lectures like this soon. We'll just figure out some cool things to share with everyone. And, you know, depending on what it is, I'm sure it'll be not necessarily just like hardware or cold storage type things, but maybe we'll get some, you know, little lectures on economics or things like that. So definitely keep following. All right, boys. Well, I'm going to wrap this one up, and then we can sit in the chat. So thanks for coming out, guys. This is the end of this episode, and we'll be back on Thursday, every Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific time, 9 p.m. Eastern time in Discord. Peace.
Peace.